This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
Outdoor Edge introduces the all-new Razor Guide Pack. Coming in at 12 ounces and in a premium wax canvas roll pack for compact storage and travel, the Razor Guide Pack is 7 blades in total, including a 5-inch replaceable blade folding knife, a 3-inch replaceable blade caping knife, and the flip and zip saw for wood or bone. Whether you're hunting the back 40 or chasing game deep in the backcountry, the Razor Guide Pack has it all. For more information, visit OutdoorEdge.com. All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson. And today we're going to be talking with my Sportsman's Empire brother, Garrett Prawl. And on this podcast in particular, actually in this season so far, in November, I think it was like 7 or so days apart, he connected on 2 deer in different states on public land. And the whole point of this podcast is same or different. What was the same about those hunts? What was different about those hunts? We talk about the terrain comparison. We talk about the time of year comparison. We talk about what these deer were doing in the rut. And we compare that. We compare the weather. We compare the terrain and all that good stuff. So it's just a different approach to a podcast. It's short. It's sweet. It's only about 30 minutes long. And so it's easily consumed. And I think you guys are going to actually be able to get something out of it, which I feel is a good thing. So short, sweet, to the point, same but different. All right, before we get into this podcast though, we got to talk about the people that pay me, and they pay me because I put out great content, in my opinion. And those companies are Tethered, Wasp, Hunt Stand, and Vortex. Now I'm going to go backwards. I usually go Tethered, Wasp, Hunt Stand, Vortex because it's on my list in front of me, but I'm going to go backwards. I'm going to go Vortex, Hunt Stand, Wasp, Tethered. And I'm going to go get also short, sweet, to the point. If you're looking for a badass pair of binoculars, rifle scopes, spotting scopes, range finders, specifically the Crossfire HD 1400, and then red dots, or anything really when it comes to optics, go check out vortexoptics.com. They have a superior, I'm thinking of another fancy word that is probably over my own head, but superior optics. And not only do they have awesome optics, and they have this thing called the VIP warranty. And that means if you beat the shit out of your equipment, you break it, you smash it, you send it back into them, they will fix it, repair it for free, and then send it back to you. Why? Because they want end users to stay Vortex customers. And that's the whole Vortex motto, man. And so not only that, they have excellent customer service. So if you're looking for an awesome pair of optics, go check out vortexoptics.com. Hunt stand, right? And so as we get into the late season here, things are going to be changing. Deer are going to be coming off this crazy rut pattern. They're going to be falling in more of a bed to food pattern. And so it's important to reference your digital maps and your journals that you've kept on hunt stand, and just go back and look at where all your action was. Go back and organize your trail camera picks on hunt stand. Check the weather, check the forecast, take a look at the different maps that they have, and then put yourself in a position where you start to think about what the deer are going to be doing late season. Look at all your entries on all your documentation on a hunt stand, and then put a game plan together to go out and try to get something done late season. So hunt stand is just a tool for documentation, in my opinion. You know, it's got the awesome satellite imagery that's updated monthly. It has the Pro Whitetail upgrade package that you can go read about. But really for me, it is a journal entry. Everything that I do, everything that I see gets documented on hunt stand. And that time, and that way, every time I open the app, I can reference different pieces of property, and I can see where deer are moving, where the action is, and then go put myself in that action. And long story short, that's what we want, right? We want to be in shooting range of a deer, and hunt stand can definitely help with that. So huntstand.com, go check it out. Wasparchery.com, my season's just been crazy this year. I shot a buck, and I owe a lot of that success. If I'm going to point at something that I feel helped me kill that deer, definitely a marginal shot. And I feel that the damage that this wasp broadhead did is the reason I found my buck. He didn't go too far before he bedded down. He bedded down because he was in a lot of pain, and his insides were destroyed. And that was because of the wasp jackhammer 3-blade broadhead. And that's what wasp does. They build badass broadheads that destroy tissue in a major way with some of the best material available, and a majority of their heads are still made in America. So wasparchery.com, go check it out. I have a 20% discount code for you, and that is NFC20. Go check it out. Last but not least, if you're looking to get in the saddle game, go check out Tethered. They have platforms, climbing sticks. They got all the saddle hunting accessories that you need. And the best part about it is they have their YouTube channel, their social media outlets. A lot of people who are active Tethered users are all putting out content that will help make you a better saddle hunter. So go check out Tethered's website. Tons of great information on this product, and I can't wait to become better at becoming a saddle hunter. And I feel like that's in my future. So go check out Tethered. And that's the end of the commercials. Let's just go ahead and quit talking and get into today's episode with the DIY sportsman, Garrett Prawl. 3, 2, 1. All right, on the phone with me today, my Sportsman's Empire brother, Garrett Prawl of the DIY Sportsman Podcast. How we doing, man?
Doing pretty well. How about you?
Doing good, man. It sounds like you've had some success this year.
Yeah, it's been a pretty good year overall.
Yeah. Let's see here. This year, have you hunted more or less, or maybe equal to previous years?
I'd say probably equal so far. Really, the biggest difference between last year and this year is probably going to be the late season time in the woods.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll be hunting as much late season as I did last year.
Yeah. Is that any particular reason for that?
Well, last year I had that Iowa late muzzleloader tag,
yeah,
and I hadn't killed a buck by that point yet, so it was pretty much like – you know, scramble mode, trying to get something done before the end of the season.
Yeah.
But this year, we've got enough tag, or we've got enough venison in the freezer between my deer and my wife's deer that I don't really need to hunt per se. So what I think I'll probably do later in December and even into January is just scout. And in some of these seasons where we still have open seasons, I'll be carrying a muzzleloader or whatever else. But, you know, the primary focus will be boots on the ground and just learning new areas.
And so if something pops up, you shoot it.
Yep.
Nice. That's a good way to do it. And I just got off the phone with a guy where we were talking about, you know, like consistent success. You know, this guy's been on a roll for a handful of years. I've been on a roll for a handful of years, and we pretty much just kind of exchanged what we felt has led to this consistent success. And we both talked about late season scouting being like how you learn, or how hunters learn the most about the terrain that these deer live in.
Yeah. And different hunting pressure cycles.
Yeah.
You don't really learn that when you're scouting in March, say, as much as you do when there's actually trucks in the parking lot and
right,
you know, all that hunter signs fresh.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a fact. That's something that I don't ever take into consideration, because the hunting pressure remains the same other than when they start to do the deer drives on the farms that I hunt. The pressure kind of is just consistent throughout the whole year. It's not like all of a sudden boom, there's pressure, except for when they start doing the deer drives. But then that clears the farms that I hunt out, and the deer just don't come back until spring. So it's hard to I don't know, scout for deer when there's no deer.
Right. Exactly.
So, all right. So I want to talk about, like, I want to name this, the title of this podcast, something along the lines of same but different. And what I mean by that is, you shot a deer in Wisconsin this year. You shot a deer in North Dakota this year, and roughly around the same time frame. I mean, we're talking about the rut time frame. We're talking about a 10-day window. And I want to talk to you about what these deer were doing that were the same, what they were doing that was probably different, the terrain that was different, maybe the same, their behavior. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool. All right. So what buck did you shoot first?
The Wisconsin one.
The Wisconsin one. Okay. And that was November 12th, you said?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So is this an area that you've hunted before a lot or a little or what?
Yeah, I've hunted a fair bit in the past, and I've put a lot of time into it, mm-hmm. more so than a lot of other places in that state. So I would say I'm highly familiar with, especially that piece that I was hunting on.
Okay. And what do you like about this property?
It gives enough habitat for deer to get away from hunters. There's no way, like in the example you laid out before, there's no way to just blow all the deer out of the place.
Gotcha.
They're always going to be able to find good cover, and they're always going to be able to escape some of the rifle pressure.
Gotcha. And so with it being Wisconsin, are we talking along the Mississippi River Valley where it's like really terrainy and real, like the potential for steep inclines?
No, pretty flat.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. A little further north than the state, a little bit deeper into the state. And yeah, you get some little like marshes and swamps and clear cuts and little like lightly rolling hills, but nothing super steep.
Gotcha. And so what this does is, but it sounds like the deer always have a place to escape to feel comfortable in.
Yep.
All right, cool. All right. Now let's go to North Dakota. All right. Talk to us a little bit about the terrain that of the area that you were hunting in South or North Dakota.
So again, pretty flat in this area, a fair bit of agriculture around. And I would say most of it is woodlots of various sizes, right? You get some tree rows that separate some of these ag fields, but then you get areas where there's just bigger chunks of timber, mm-hmm. but it's still mostly flat. And I would say that this place probably has less of the thicker cover maybe, but it also just seems like the hunting habits during the rifle season out there are a little bit different than you would get in, say, Wisconsin. So I think that played a bit of a role as well. But it's pretty much just a, you know, big flat wood lot.
Yeah. And this, was it also rifle season when you shot your North Dakota buck?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you shot your deer in Wisconsin and in North Dakota with a bow during the rifle seasons, right? So there was an ample amount of pressure already being put on both deer herds.
Well, the Wisconsin one wasn't yet, but the North Dakota one was.
Okay. Yep. When did the Wisconsin gun season kick off?
This year it would have been the 19th.
The 19th, okay. All right. So that was a little bit different then, right?
Yeah. Okay. But the North Dakota one, by contrast, had been open, I think, since the 4th or the 5th.
Oh, okay. All right. So we have two different states. It sounds like there's more – would this be an accurate statement? There's more cover in the Wisconsin property compared to the North Dakota property?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Okay. Was there more deer density in Wisconsin than there was North Dakota?
That's kind of tough to say. I don't know enough about the North Dakota spot specifically, because obviously once the crops come out, those deer start to condense a little bit more than they would in the area that I was in, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
The Wisconsin area, it's a little more consistent throughout the course of the year. So it'd be tough for me to really say, but I would say they're maybe similar.
Okay. What did you see when you were out there in North Dakota?
A lot of emptiness when you're just driving around on the roads.
That's a fact.
Right, just snow across every field, and 90% of the stuff you drive past, it's like there's no deer out here.
Yeah.
And even when the snow had been around for several days. But what it also seemed to be a little bit more so than in Wisconsin was it seemed like a large majority of the people that were gun hunting were primarily driving the roads. And I know a lot of guys, too, that have land might have, you know, tower stands like they do in every state that they would hunt out of. But it seemed like in the places I spot checked, if you were just driving past, you would have no idea that the deer were there.
Yeah.
But if you got in and scouted 50, 100, 200 yards away from the road, okay, now we can start to see tracks. And so that was kind of what I was doing when I first arrived there, was just getting out of the truck and spot checking a few of the areas I'd scouted or hunted in the past.
Okay. All right. All right. So let's talk a little bit about the deer behavior in both of these spots during this time frame that you were there. What was the same and what was different?
Probably the biggest similarity is just the timing around the rut.
Yeah.
And between the 12th and the 20th, I mean, in both of those states, I think the peak conception is like the 15th or so.
Yeah.
So within a week on either direction of that, so, you know, close to the top of the bell curve there. So I think that's definitely one similarity. Obviously, I think the deer generally act a little bit different on the front end than it would on the back end. But I was really focusing on, I guess, that aspect of deer movement, that there's probably going to be does that are actively in heat, and that might hold some of those bucks, the bigger bucks especially, down a little bit longer. But if I spend time in the tree and in the right spot, I might have an opportunity. And certainly in either scenario, there's going to be younger bucks that are probably walking around if they're not ultra pressured.
Yeah. And so, you know, with it being that time of year when you ended up getting into the stand, well, let me back up a bit, because my experience is I feel like the deer out west in these flatter environments with less cover are they hold, I don't know, I want to hear your opinion on this, they hold tighter to cover longer than, let's say, your traditional Midwestern ag field timber lot type buck. What would you say on that?
I'd say during the rifle season especially, that's probably true.
Yeah.
I just think road hunt, from what I've seen, and this is very, you know, small sample size opinion, it seems like you just have better ability to road hunt out there with the different laws that are in place.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, South Dakota and Kansas, whatever else are different, I'm not really sure, but it seems like at least for deer that are visible from the road, probably less likely than you might get in the Midwest.
Yeah.
But in terms of like ultra thick cover versus like transition cover, maybe similar for what I've seen.
Okay. And so then when you were in the tree for, you know, on both of these hunts, was the deer, like as far as the time of day, was the deer movement similar or different?
It actually was, I would say, a little bit different. And some of this too is just based off of historical trail cam data that I have, especially on the Wisconsin side. But this time of year, I was seeing more, and maybe the weather had a factor too, I was seeing more morning movement. And it was almost like if I got to like noon or 1 o'clock and I stuck it out till then, like there was still that chance that I'd have a buck come walking by. But it seemed like much less likely of an opportunity of seeing movement in the tree from like 2 o'clock to the end of the day. But morning, you know, 8 a.m., 9 a.m., 10 a.m., all, you know, could be great opportunities. Whereas it seemed like on the North Dakota piece, it might have been more, I guess, midday. You know, there was a year in the past where I had left a camera out and picked it up late season to get some of that rut timing just to see, like, what was happening. And it did seem like midday was very common as well, especially on the kind of that middle period of the rut and the later rut. Like if I had a deer that would show up on like, let's say the 24th, he comes walking through.
Yeah.
It was probably a midday occurrence.
Okay. So the later into the rut, the more midday movement you were starting to see.
Yeah, it seemed to be the case.
Okay. Did that just mean more movement in general, or were you just, did you have more evening and morning movement as well with more midday movement?
It didn't necessarily seem to be linked per se. It seemed like when you had that midday movement, it was like maybe that was the only deer that came through. Maybe there was six does that had come by earlier in the morning and, you know, two younger bucks.
Okay.
It seemed like one of those, like I couldn't pinpoint exactly why the deer moved through that area on that specific day, other than maybe he had just gotten off the doe and he's looking for his next one.
Yeah.
But it seemed like weather overall generally had a pretty big factor in how much overall movement you saw.
Yeah.
During the day.
And was that consistent on both places?
Yeah. Yeah. We had finally gotten good weather in Wisconsin. It had been really hot for early November and late October. And then we finally got a decent cold front to get temperatures down into the 20s.
And that kick started it.
Yeah, it really seemed to. Then in North Dakota, it was supposed to be a lot colder. I lucked out a little bit. I think it was 17 degrees when I got into the woods that morning.
Okay. And so and so you feel that those colder temperatures really did get the deer moving more?
Seemed to.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And so when you were out there, I mean, did you witness any chasing? Was it still? And so here's what I learned this year on one of the farms that I hunt. Man, dude, I think on some of the farms that I hunt, it is still pre-rut type activity. I mean, I was seeing doe groups, big doe groups, mature does by themselves. I was seeing like bucks just not necessarily cruising all day, but by themselves, not taking interest in any does quite yet. And so that pre-rut type activity led all the way up until, I want to say like November 6th and 7th. And so traditionally when people say, when does the rut start? They're like, oh, it starts November 1st. But I wasn't seeing any type of rutting activity until after that. So were you seeing any pre-rut, or was this full-blown rut activity?
I didn't see as much pre-rut as I saw the year prior. And I think part of that may be due to some of the deer that were in the area I was hunting last year either got killed or they shifted their home range or something, because there was some deer that did not show up that I was absolutely expecting to show up.
Yeah.
So I think that was part of it. But yeah, I think just like you, overall, I saw more general deer movement, you know, bed to food, you know, early morning, late evening type movement until that big cold snap hit in Wisconsin. And that was when I started to see more of the quote unquote traditional rut activity, you know, where you had, you know, bucks just cruising around and maybe harassing does and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Now when it comes to the post rut, now you said this year, you're probably just going to go out and do some scouting, take a gun with you just in case, but you're going to go do some scouting. What are some things that you've learned from these late season scouts that have helped you the following season, whether it's during the rut or during the next late season?
Well, if there's snow, then what I see on the ground directly correlates to the next year's late season. It seems like if there's not snow on the ground, which like when I did that muzzleloader trip last year in Iowa, yeah, the whole like first week there was no snow. and the ground was frozen. So I would see tracks in the ground. It's like, well, this could be weeks old. That's just locked in and frozen. And any sign that was getting left was not necessarily indenting the ground the same way that it would if the ground was not frozen. So right. That made it very difficult. And I was like, it almost seemed more like a spring scouting trip because a lot of the rut sign was still locked in. It was really easy to see.
Yeah.
But then the next week, once the snow hit, it was totally different. Okay, now here I can see what the deer are doing right now. And so that plays a big piece of it, is whether or not there's actively snow on the ground, presuming the ground is frozen.
Yeah. All right. And then do you do the same style? Are you going back to North Dakota to scout this way as well this year?
I don't know that I will late season, but I probably will make a spring scouting trip out there.
Yeah.
I felt like I did a fair amount of postseason scouting this year, but I also feel like it wasn't enough. So I'm going to try and double down a little bit this next year and hit all the states that I plan on hunting next year in more detail and to try to cast a little bit wider net than I had this year.
Gotcha. All right. So I want to talk now in generality, I guess, in general. I want to talk about maybe deer behavior overall, and maybe we'll cycle through, you know, just your experience, you know, in all these different states that you've hunted. And one thing that you've noticed, and it can be early season, it can be late season, it could be postseason or, you know, summertime. What are some things that you have witnessed from a deer behavior standpoint that deer tend to do the same?
Well, at least in the upper Midwest here, it seems like the most consistent things that I see would be, you know, like that mid-October timeframe, they start leaving sign, you start to see some bucks change in their core areas. It seems like that's the case in all, you know, three of the states I hunt most often. They start to daylight more as long as you got good weather late October. Mm-hmm. And then the November timeframe, that's when I start to see the most differences. So I would say just like leading up to and right up, you know, against the firearm season openers.
Yep.
I see a lot of similarities in how those different deer herds behave.
Yeah.
And that seems to also be the case across different habitat types.
Yeah. Yeah. And then when it comes to that, you know, in certain parts of Wisconsin, you mentioned there's some marshes, and there's some, you know, some bigger timber. You also mentioned out in North Dakota, you know, it's more wide open, right? With, you know, just little woodlots or fence rows or tree lines or, you know, tree rows or something like that. I know obviously the terrain itself and the environment is different, but from a buck doing buck things like making scrapes and making rubs and maybe bed to food patterns, is there one thing that one or multiple things that stick out to you of, hey, they do it completely different this way than they do over here?
Maybe not so much in the what, but the how.
Yeah.
Like if you got hill country terrain versus flat marshy terrain versus wide open ag country where they can see across picked crop fields. I think the commonality is that they're going to want to stay hidden or they're going to want to, you know, stay away from pressure. How they do that seems to vary just based on what the habitat around them is like.
Yeah. 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 Anything else from a same or different that you've identified throughout the years that, you know, like, and maybe we'll even talk about time of year, right? Where, a group of deer will do this thing the same all the way up until this time of year, but then they'll do it different for a period of time, then go back, or I don't know, something like that.
It seems like from a late season perspective, one thing I've noticed is that the later a state has gun seasons going, it seems like it takes longer for that deer herd to start acting like quote unquote normal.
Yeah.
And to where you can start to just kind of lay back and really get a really predictable pattern again before the season is up. Whereas, you know, some of these like Southern Minnesota, they got the CWD hunts where you got shotgun hunts basically going through mid-December and they had started back in like the first week of November. And so that seems to change things a little bit in terms of how long it might take for a deer to get back to a daylight movement pattern before the season ends, which is December 31st.
Yeah.
So you get the odds stack way against you.
Yeah.
Versus a Wisconsin that might have an extended archery out to January 31st. Okay, well, you know, the time of the year makes a huge difference. That season's open an extra month. There's not a lot of guys hunting that extra month. And one thing I've noticed too, that late November time frame, a lot of the guys, especially, you know, people that hunt in Iowa I listen to, that will say that Thanksgiving week can be magical. And growing up in Wisconsin, I never really noticed that much. But their gun season always comes in, like, you know, the 16th through the 20th.
Yeah.
But what I have noticed through either running cameras in Minnesota, or what I've started to learn a little bit in, like, the western states as well, is that the gun seasons, either not having as many people partake in them, or just having different, you know, cultural norms, or how early that gun season comes in and then stops. Like in Minnesota, I've seen the Thanksgiving week be better than it would be in Wisconsin. And I think that's because a lot of that gun pressure hits really hard that first week in November and into the second week in November. But then it kind of lays off a little bit. And like I said, there's still guys that'll hunt those extended seasons and the, you know, CWD and whatever else. But that third week in November, there's probably not going to be as many, nearly as many guys in the woods as there was the first week in November. And so that third week seems like it can have a boost.
Yeah.
It's not as good as, you know, prime rut in most states, but in terms of getting maybe that one opportunity out of the year that you're looking for, like, it seems like it's more likely to happen in a state like that.
Right. So in Iowa, you know, we have the two shotgun seasons, and there's a ton of pressure that happens when everybody starts doing the deer drives. What state, and you can use it just in this year, or you can use it through all the states that you've hunted, in your opinion, what state or areas do you feel the deer herd is impacted the greatest by the opening of a gun season?
I'd say probably the more open, either open ag where it's maybe 80% ag, 20% woods, or even like prairie, like Southwest Minnesota is a good example, where it's just wide open.
Yeah.
And if you got guys that are doing deer drives in those woodlots, there's not a whole lot of places those deer can hide. And I think that plays a much bigger impact than if you were to say go into some place that's a big marsh or swamp, you know, got 8 foot high cattails and places where those deer can get away from other hunters. Yeah. Obviously, a lot of those deer, I think, you know, with enough pressure, you can do a lot of damage. But even like 300 foot bluffs, like especially if you got buckthorn or something on a hillside, that protects those deer a lot more than they, during those firearm seasons with heavy pressure, than they would be protected in a wide open area.
Right. Right. Okay. All right. And so what's on the docket for next year? You said you're going to try to cast a wider net. What states are you planning on hunting?
So actually in January, I'm going to be going down to Alabama for the first time.
I'll be doing
a hunt with the Spartan Forge crew for the veterans hunt that they are doing a giveaway on.
Yes.
And then, so that'll be a first for me, and that should be fun. I don't really know a whole lot of the details quite yet, but that's been a hunt that I've been wanting to do for quite a while. But then likely going into the remainder of the hunting season, it'll probably be very similar to this year, because I felt like in comparison to the years prior, I felt like I had more control this year. Last couple of years, I had spread myself out a little bit too thin, too many tags, too many states.
Mm-hmm.
But I really started to iron in that I need to hunt this state this time of year, then move to this state this time of year.
Yeah.
And kind of work through that progression and just kind of compartmentalize the hunting season a little bit better. The one oddball that I may do, and I have to make a decision here in the next week probably, is I've got a ton of black bear points for Wisconsin.
Like, okay.
I should easily draw. So I've been trying to figure out when I would do that. Maybe it's going to be this next year.
Yeah. When do you, so as far as black bear are concerned, do you hunt whitetails in black bear areas already in Wisconsin?
Oh yeah. Yeah. In fact, in I think September this year, I had more bears on camera than I did deer.
Wow. So you have a good idea of where they're at.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any giant bear?
I think the biggest one I saw this year was probably in like the maybe 250, 275 range.
Okay.
There was one last year that was probably pushing 300.
Yeah.
But they can get much bigger. And I think the average, I can't remember where I read this or heard this, but I think the average black bear, I think they get shot is in the neighborhood of like the same size as a whitetail, like 150 okay. to 200 pounds.
Gotcha.
Dressed. But obviously they can get much bigger, but it takes a lot of years, I think, generally to get a boar that's, you know, 400 or 500 pounds.
Yeah. And is that a baiting scenario where you start a bait site or not?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting hunting some of these areas that have more black bears. It's really rare still for me to see them in the tree. I've seen a couple of them in the tree just naturally, but they're very non-patternable from what I've seen.
Okay.
They just kind of roam. And if you look at the camera data, they daylight a ton in some of these areas. Like a lot of times when you talk to people who bait black bears, it's like right at the last light they'll come in, right? Unless there's a lot of bears around, there's a lot of competition. Or if you have guys that have bears in cornfields, that's like a little bit different scenario. But if you just got these big giant swamps and big woods habitat,
yeah.
I was really surprised to learn just how often those deer are moving in daylight. So that'll be something I'll probably look at as well. But I think most likely the plan, just based off of, you know, the amount of time that I'll have and what to put into that hunt, compared to the deer hunting, plus just being able to keep tabs in a lot of different places and cast a pretty wide net, I would probably be doing baiting just like, you know, 95% of the other guys are in that area of the state. Gotcha. I guess there's dog hunting as well, but
oh, okay.
I feel like I'd have a little bit more control over my own destiny with bait.
Yeah, absolutely. That's interesting, man. You know, every once in a while you'll hear guys talk about a bear, you know, in northern Iowa. They'll say, oh man, we had a bear sighting or a bear on trail camera or something like that. But down here this year in southern Iowa, there has been, like, there was a mountain lion caught on trail camera less than a mile from where I live on it's actually one of my wife's friend's farms. Her and her husband own a little acreage out there, and they had a young mountain lion. And then down where I was hunting this year in south central Iowa, just like every county had multiple sightings of them. And so I don't know, man, that's crazy how these animals can just, you know, fluctuate from one area to the next. And when I mean one area, I mean like the one collar tracked mountain lion came from the suburbs of Denver all the way through, I want to say, Nebraska, and then made its way to western Iowa. That's wow. The whole state of Nebraska in a year. And so that to me is crazy that an animal will do that over the course of a year.
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
Yeah. So, well, man, I wanted to keep this podcast pretty short and sweet, Garrett. So I really do appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on and BS with us a little bit. Good luck during your Alabama hunt and any late season activities that you're doing. And again, thanks for your time, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Good talking to you, Dan.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, another episode in the books. Please go to iTunes, leave a 5-star review for me. Please go to Instagram. Please go to Facebook. Make sure you guys are following along. And then also make sure that you are subscribed on iTunes or wherever you download your podcast, so that when the time comes for another episode to launch, the only thing you have to do is open up your phone and hit the play button. And huge shout out to Tethered. Huge shout out to Wasp. Hunt Stand, Vortex. Huge shout out to Garrett for taking time out of his day, and huge shout out to all of you for continuing to support the Nine Finger Chronicles after all these years, man. I really appreciate that. So good vibes in, good vibes out. Wear your safety harness, and we'll talk to you next time. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.